Oh my goodness. Yeah, that was crazy for like a week. It seemed like we were about to bomb Syria, and God knows where it would have gone there. Just for like a week, it seemed like that was imminent. And then,
it was very frustrating. I had a piece in USA Today, scowling at the bombing of Syria. I mean, I don't like the Syrian government, but there's no reason to get involved. And if you look at the many of the groups opposing the Syrian government, they're the same groups that were some of the most brutal terrorist groups in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And why in hell the U.S. would want to intervene on their side and basically empower them? It makes no sense at all, except there's a lot of weird stuff going on in American politics as far as some of those foreign interventions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like there's always something going on with American interventions. You know, it's just like, it's never what it says, what it says it is.
Yeah, and that's a frustrating thing, writing about foreign policy. And I didn't write much about foreign policy prior to the Kosovo War in 1999 because it just struck me as a pack of lies.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the U.S. government, but a lot of foreign governments as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to make sense of something, and you're trying to get a bead on it, and then all of a sudden, 6 months later, it turns out, well, okay, there's everything that we said last year about this country, it was false. It was actually this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking, why the hell should I bother investigating and trying to nail it down? But things changed after 9/11 because the foreign policy became the source of some of the biggest threats against our freedom.
Mm. Yeah. I remember during the Bush administration, like, it was very foreign policy was very contentious. Like, if you didn't support the war in Iraq or the war in Afghanistan, you were a terrorist or whatever, you know, stuff like that. I remember that. And then I still kind of go ahead. Sorry.
No, please.
I was gonna say, and like today, now there are like echoes of that. You know, you hear if you don't support drone strikes, you're a terrorist or whatever, and you hear it from left wing people too. So it's really even weirder.
Disappointing because I went to a lot of the anti-war demonstrations in the during the Bush administration, and you know there were the rank and file there were mostly left wing. There were some conservatives there, there were mm-hmm. some libertarians, but the bulk of the folks were left wing and some very hard left.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those left wing groups, like the Answer Coalition, is still out there, and it was in the forefront of opposing war against Syria or Iran or other places. But by and large, things got real quiet after Obama became president.
Yeah. Strange, huh?
Well, it's a paradox, you know. It's just, but it's sad because it would be great if he was feeling a lot more heat from his core supporters about some of his violations of the things he said in his first presidential campaign,
mm-hmm.
as far as foreign policy and civil liberties and having respect for the Constitution.
Yeah, that, I mean, if he did that stuff, I'd be all for him, you know. I think a lot of people would, you know, but just like, it's not, we don't just irrationally hate the president, you know, it's just like, he's doing bad stuff. Yeah.
Well, and there was a set of principles which he basically promised, and very few of those have survived his term in office thus far.
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, it's just like, and you even kind of saw that with George Bush when he first was elected, I don't know if most of my listeners remember this, but he actually campaigned on a humble foreign policy, and he supported the bombing of Yugoslavia, but he opposed the peacekeeping afterwards, and he spoke out against nation building. So I don't know, it's just really, it's a strange thing to see from Bush after 8 years of him, you know.
Yeah, well, it was interesting in his debates with Al Gore in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
The best phrase he had was something that America needs a more humble foreign policy,
mm-hmm.
and that was so encouraging because he was absolutely right. It made no sense for the U.S. to try to be dominating the world, and this whole notion of a new world order, which is a phrase that his father used first, and then Clinton acted like it was his mandate.
Mm-hmm.
It was working out very badly in many places, and so you would have thought that Bush would pull back from that, but a lot of the people that he staffed his administration with, people like Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz, these are folks who are just diehard interventionists who dodge military service themselves.
Yeah. I remember those guys, yeah. And they didn't serve or anything. Yeah, but
they were dark times. They were very dark times.
Yeah, I remember. I was like, what, maybe a little over 10 years old when I was hopping, but I remember it vividly. Yeah. Oh, if I could revisit civil liberties in your one of your first book I read, Lost Rights. I mean, this is like it's just an amazing book. It's just like it documents like so many like egregious cases of like government overreach. You know, that's what it's called. It's just like in every realm, it's like almost every realm. There's like some kind of mischief going on. You know, just like I mean, I don't know which department it was, but a department like cracking down on like Vietnamese citizens who sent food back to their mother, to their parents in Vietnam and getting tried under the enemy, trading with the enemy act or whatever, just like nonsensical stuff like this. It's just like, I mean, how did you go about like deciding how you would document each like kind of civil liberty violation? You know, it's just like so huge. Whatever.
The thing that I was aspiring to do with Lost Rights was to wake people up to how the government had far more arbitrary power across the board. And it wasn't simply a question of the war on drugs. It wasn't simply a question of asset forfeiture or government regulation on business, but it was endemic. And I was trying to wake people up to the peril that government power and politicians pose to them in every part of their lives. And to make people recognize that the only way to safeguard their rights and liberty was to have a government that was far less powerful. There was a chapter in there on how daily life was being criminalized, and I made sure that I had the section on guns right next to the section on drugs, because there were a lot of people who would agree with me on drugs who would be horrified at my views on guns, and vice versa. But I was trying to find a way to help liberals and conservatives recognize that the guns and the drugs were not completely separate issues. And that the part of the bad thing about the war on drugs was it was causing a lot more violent crime, which some politicians were using to try to justify taking away guns.
I see. Yeah.
I was building on some of the investigative work I'd done over the previous 7 or 8 years. And then I did a shitload of fresh digging for that book. And then I had a really good editor, Simon Winder, a British guy at St. Martin's on that. And it was nice to have an editor with courage who wasn't flinching and saying, well, you know, people might be offended by this. No. They just, you know, it was charged forward. They made sure that it was accurate as far as libel purposes, and then they launched. So.
I see. Yeah, and it's just interesting because the book doesn't like focus on a particular administration. It just like it talks about violations under the George H.W. Bush administration and the Clinton administration, and it makes the point that it's not a partisan thing. It's like both parties will do it, and like I don't know. I just think it's for that reason alone, it is a very valuable work, you know. And
Thanks. That's very kind. I've often been accused of being a partisan, but that's basically if I'm criticizing the current president, I'm assumed to be a partisan of the other party. But what I try to do in Lost Rights and some other books is just kind of doesn't really matter that much whether it's a Democrat or it's a Republican, because both parties have consistently grabbed far more power than the Constitution permitted. And both of them have been very often dishonest about how that power was used, and they've trampled far more rights than what they've admitted.
Oh my goodness!
And if people can get beyond the notion that this party or the other party is going to save them, that people will become more independent in their political views and recognize they've got to stand up for themselves, and that no one from Washington is going to take care of them.
I see. Yeah, and speaking of because continuing this discussion of civil rights violations, right now in the news, there's a lot of controversy over a standoff at the Bundy Ranch between the Bureau of Land Management and rancher Clive and Bundy, and I guess supporters who came to stand up for him. And so it's just like, what's your take on that right now?
feds have overreached. They've been, very attempting to be very domineering. It's worked out very badly. Senator Reid, I think, was saying that the supporters of Bundy were a domestic terrorist, which is a pretty broad class, as well as a dangerous classification to put on people. A large part of the trouble is that the federal government owns 81% of the state of Nevada, and there's no reason for it to own so much of that land. The western states, the federal role is just far too great, and people would have more room for to build your own lives if you had less government property out there. And I'm saying that as someone who was raised on federal property on a beef cattle research station. So.
I see. Yeah, and are you concerned at all that there might be another repeat of Waco or Ruby Ridge here, or is that just...
Well, I mean, that's always the fear when you've got both sides ramping up. I think it'd be a lot more difficult for the government to do the kind of killings that did at Ruby Ridge and Waco now, partly because cell phones with cameras are practically everywhere. And the government realizes that, and so it would not be able to control the narrative like it did in the past. So I think that's limiting the government power a little bit. And I think that the FBI learned a little bit from Waco. There was a standoff 3 years after Waco, up in Montana, with a group called the Freemen, and the FBI came in and surrounded them and basically put them under siege. And it eventually reached a peaceful conclusion, but it was good the FBI didn't go charging in there shooting at people or vice versa. So I think you're going to have the same thing work out this time.